What's up, everybody? This is Zach with another episode of EM Weekly. I'm really excited this week to be joined by Joseph, who's going to tell us about some really cool stuff that hopefully you already know about. And if not, we want you to find out about it. Joseph, thank you for joining me. And I'm super excited to have you because you're a fellow Vermonter. And apparently, like as the crow flies, I could probably throw a rock and maybe hit you from my house right now, which is very cool.
It is cool. Thanks for having me on the show, neighbor. I really appreciate it.
And speaking of neighbors, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and who you work for?
Sure. So my name is Joseph Porcelli, and I'm Nextdoor's global government lead, crisis response and life safety. And my responsibilities here kind of span the gamut. I work with emergency managers across the country. During disasters, I help lead our response efforts and in some cases communicate directly with our neighbors to help them prepare if we don't have coverage in a certain area from a local or state emergency manager. And I work with organizations like the National Fire Protection Association to help our neighbors understand what they can do to prevent fires, and organizations like FEMA to prepare for emergencies.
The little the tiny CDC organization of FEMA. Yeah.
Yeah. Basically, we, you know, Nextdoor is used by 1 in 3 households across the country, very active membership, and there's lots of really important information that needs to get out to help people be safe and prepare and mitigate for disasters and hazards they face. And so we do that in a number of ways. There's a public agency platform that's free called Nextdoor for public agencies. Over 5,000 public agencies use it, about 20-some thousand communicators are being able to reach our message, reach our neighbors. And essentially the platform is a built-in platform. So it's opt-out. So instead of having to earn the audience, built-in audience is there and they can, you know, get messages out to them and geo-target those messages into specific neighborhoods. So we provide the platform. I spend a lot of my time helping to curate content that's available in our content library, because folks are super busy. So yeah, having worked in government myself in a number of capacities, I thought if I built this content library out, it would save a lot of time and more helpful content would get out, which would help people prepare for, respond to, recover from disasters more quickly.
We'll be right back after this quick break for ads.
The L3Harris Extreme 400P radio solves problems and is specifically designed for emergency services. How do we know? We field tested it with medical, urban search and rescue, and collapse and confined structures. This radio is amazingly tough. Check out the L3Harris Extreme 400P radio at l3harris.com right now.
How do you spell Doberman Emergency Management? EOP, OEP, HVA, HMP, Thyra, TTX, Drone, PDA.
Whenever you need an expert, Doberman Emergency Management field experts are there for support. Contact an expert at DobermanEMG.com today.
Yeah, it's really cool. We'll talk about specifically some of the initiatives you guys are doing in a moment. How did you get into your position? Kind of what's your background? And because I saw you got the NLPI, which is a, you know, that's definitely one of the things that I think a lot of emergency managers, when they see that, are like, oh, man, I really want to do it. I haven't done it yet. I'm definitely a huge fan. Every time I've seen presentations or seen work done by that organization, it's awesome. But yeah, if you want to tell us a little bit about your background and how you found yourself where you're at.
Sure. It's a really, it's one of those things where if you look at my resume at individual points in time and where I am now, it would make zero sense.
You're preaching to the choir, my friend.
You know, I started out just by taking action in my neighborhood. This is back in 2004. I was a database consultant at the time, ACT, Contact Management Database. And there's a lot of crime in my neighborhood. And it turned out my neighbors didn't know each other and they're walking home from the T in Boston, lived in a neighborhood called Jamaica Plain. No one was communicating with each other. No one was communicating with the police. And we were just easy pickings.
Yeah.
And I wound up reaching out to the neighborhood watch unit. I'm like, hey, this is going on. They're like, we know. We were hoping someone would step up and take action.
Yeah.
And they're like, bring your neighbors together. And I threw awesome parties in college. So I really knew how to promote, get the word out. And so I asked her, I'm like, hey, give me 1,000 flyers. She's like, here's 100. Like, okay. So I grabbed them and I went and spent 15 minutes and printed out 100 flyers and I called them back. I'm like, 1,000 flyers. they printed me another 100, and I just repeated that a number of times. And I put 500 flyers out.
10 times if my math is correct.
Basically, 100 people showed up to this community meeting, and they're like, what happened? I'm like, I flyered the whole neighborhood. How? They're like, you went to 500 houses? I'm like, yeah, it took like 2 hours, no problem. And at that meeting, we learned we should get to know who our neighbors are. And actually, Bob Ciccolo, I think he may have just retired from Boston PD, but I remember he said this thing to me. He's like, if you see someone going through your neighbor's window and it's not your neighbor's, you should probably give us a call. People are like, oh, that makes sense.
Crazy concept, right?
And so basically, I was doing these organizing initiatives. We did neighborhood socials so neighbors could meet each other and local officers and folks from the city and inspectional services and that kind of stuff. And I did that for like a year and it was fun. And then I started at one meeting, I'm like, I'm not sure what else to do. And I said to the community, like, what else would you like to do with this? And someone's like, well, why don't you let us get up and make announcements about things we're doing? And I'm like, that's a great idea. And people started announcing these things they wanted to do together. Someone started a book club, a running club, that kind of thing. And 2 years later, we had started 200 community service projects and social activity clubs. And we were doing these community organizing expos every quarter. 400 people would show up to meet their neighbors and do stuff together. It's like, well, this is really neat. And at the time, crime started dropping in my neighborhood. So I got a call one day from Judy Wright, who is the director at the Neighborhood Watch Unit, Boston PD. She's like, hey, I got an opening on my team. You want to come work for me? And I'm like, hell yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not really that good at like working on servers and that kind of stuff. So I jumped at the opportunity. It was barely a livable wage at the time, but I was having lots of fun and created some new organizing models. In one neighborhood, we started like 100 and some neighborhood watch groups in 1 year, and Park One Crime dropped 13%. It's like, ooh, really onto something. That experience, though, showed me that, you know, doing things manually on foot was a bottleneck, and I needed to figure out a way to connect neighbors to each other and to the police officers and other folks from the city that I was working with without me being in the way. And so I eventually discovered a platform called Ning, which is a social networking platform for whatever you want to do. And I wound up building the first social network for a city, for the city of Boston. And we first built a social network for the police department, and I built one for the neighborhood. By that time, my organizing efforts became a nonprofit called Neighbors for Neighbors. And what we learned is when there's not a lot of crime, it drops off. And so we built one social network.
Yeah.
We combined them. And then that really kind of, my career took off. The smartest thing I ever did is I emailed the CEO of Ning, Gina Bianchini. I'm like, hey, look what I did with your technology. And then 2 days later at the Personal Democracy Forum, she talked about it and my career took off. My phone started ringing.
Yeah.
From there, Ning had VIP reps for people doing cool stuff. And he calls me. He's like, hey, man, I got something for you. He's like, Homeland Security is going to build a social network for border affairs. And they need somebody with law enforcement consulting and like social networking experience. You're the only one in the country. You interested? I'm like, I don't know. So he set up a meeting. I drove down to DC and I met with him and I'm like, hey, I'm happy to do this for you, but I got to do it my way. It's got to be authentic. It's got to be real.
Yeah.
I'm not, you know, no propaganda stuff. And they're like, do it. And I did. And that was a really interesting experience. And from there, a friend of mine who also built a social network on Ning, his name is Steve Ressler. He started govloop.com. And he got acquired by a company called GovDelivery, which is now Granicus.
Yeah, yeah. Probably anyone who's got gets your email about trash day and alternative street parking and all that stuff, mm-hmm. it's probably done through GovDelivery.
Yeah. So Steve, Scott Burns, who was the CEO, and I started a professional service practice around, you know, doing engagement initiatives and stuff together. And from there, we landed FEMA as a client. And there I built community.fema.gov, which was the national preparedness community with Daryl Madden, who was head of the Ready campaign at the time.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And that was awesome. And so by this time, we're like 2014-ish. Nextdoor was raising lots of money. I thought it was awesome. And I kind of had to stop doing what I was doing in Boston. I wound up working in DC. The commuting on US Airways twice a week was not really fun. and so I moved to DC and one day I just got the courage. I emailed the folks at Nextdoor and it turned out that Sarah Leary, one of the co-founders, was a member of my social network in Boston.
No way. Yeah. It's amazing.
Like, I know that dude. Bring him in.
Yeah.
And in May, it will be 10 years that I've been at Nextdoor. So
that's so awesome. So there's like 15 different things I want to revisit in this conversation, because I think, you know, particularly for a lot of folks, I like to talk and I like to listen. Obviously, I have a podcast for it. This is basically just a professionalized way for me to leave my wife alone, because she gets tired of hearing me say the same stuff over and over. But
we should introduce our wives.
You took initiative.
Good for both of us.
Yes, of course. Yeah. You. Yes, it's been a saving grace, which is her name. So I've saved Grace. You took initiative. This is something that I think a lot of people are afraid to do. I because I'm someone who just likes to listen to people, I found myself in so many conversations where people are like, I'm stuck in a rut. I need to know how to make my life better, or I have this thought on the to make my you know, the people around me better, whatever that is. And the hangup is almost always to simply take that first step. That's the scariest step, is always the first step.
That's right.
And so to look at a problem and take initiative you set yourself apart from everyone else. Because it's true. I mean, this is like 90, I don't know. This is a made up number. So it's correct 75% of the time, you know, out of 700 times. I don't know, some random statistic. But I would say 90% of people stop whatever they're working on at the point of initiation, because they're like, ugh, it's too much work. It's going to cost money. Mm-hmm. I don't have the time, you know, whatever excuse we make. So how did you step over the Rubicon in this case to sort of make that initiative? Or were you just always like this?
I think my mom would tell you I've always been like this. I've also learned that when you take risks and try things, cool things can happen.
100%.
My whole career is here because I took action. Yeah. You know, I still am scared. I'm still do things that are daunting, but what I've learned is to fail often and gracefully and just accept that. And I've also just built a community of people who support me, who I will say, hey, I've got this idea, and they'll give me some feedback on it. And I've also learned I don't have to do things on my own, and I know what my strengths are and I know what my weaknesses are. And so I try and do things as, you know, you talked about NPLI earlier, you know, meta leadership is not about, it's about doing things together and valuing everyone and not having to be the winner or the one who gets all the credit. It's just about doing the work for the sake of doing the work, for doing good that needs to be done. And so for me, that frees me up to do things. And, you know, I think, not to get too existential, but I've learned to not worry about looking good. And that's also a risk. Like I'm not super competitive, and I don't, you know, I don't want to be like, I just want to do the work. I like doing the work. I believe I'm here to help neighbors help each other. And technology has just been the medium in which I've like practiced and learned to do that.
So that lack of arrogance and ego, I think I'm the same way. I don't like to take credit for anything. When people start to say anything or celebrate anything I've done, it makes me like want to throw up and die. I'll give some more credit to my wife. She's like, it's like you love being in the spotlight, but the minute you realize it's on you, you freak out.
Yeah. I actually don't mind being in the spotlight, to be honest. It's more about...
Oh, so you're an egomaniac.
No, I mean, there are times when I...
Recognition is good. I think recognition is good. And being celebrated for good things is good.
I just focus on doing good. I'm not trying to be seen as like, you know, the leader. I just want to make it happen. I don't care if you're the leader. Yes. If I make it happen, I'm happy. That's the point.
So that's like confidence versus ego, right? Like, if you're confident, you know, you can take pride in the stuff you're doing because you're doing good things. Mm-hmm. If you let your ego take over, that's when like you start to do things for the wrong reasons, you know, the Machiavellian approach to leadership.
And I wouldn't exactly describe myself as a confident person either. Like I often feel awkward and uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I suppose my confidence has grown as I've gotten older. I think maybe it's more about willing to feel awkward and uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I'm become more comfortable feeling uncomfortable. That makes sense.
Yeah, I did stand up so I could basically learn how to live in that moment. And now I kind of relish it. It has been a detriment to all of these social gatherings that we've had ever since, because nothing's off the table. I'm totally happy to embarrass myself in front of everyone. So the other thing that I really want to focus on is the neighbors helping neighbors. And specifically, we can talk about the Storm Crew program that you're doing. But I want to talk a little bit before to discuss the science behind why this works, because you look at New England states, you look at New York, specifically New York City, D.C. These are communities that have very high social capital. They take pride in where they are, and they care about their neighbors. They may not care about them all the time necessarily. You know, sure, we got neighbors disputes. I mean, if you spend any time in New York City, especially if you're, you know, you haven't spent a lot of time in New York City, you think everyone hates everyone. But when push comes to shove, those communities come together and they help each other out and they respond to it. You know, the Boston Strong, you know, post 9/11 New York. There's plenty of examples of this, but it also is probably the most accurate measure of community resilience that you can have. I have sort of pushed back on the individual preparedness approach, because I think that in order for anyone to survive a real true disaster, you'll never do it on your own. You have to have a community. I mean, we're a social species, right? Like, we humans have been parts of communities since the dawn of time. And but what's changed is how we make that community. And you're talking about sort of that evolution from pre-internet to now only internet, for how some people get, you know, their social lives. So I guess if you have thoughts on the social capital aspect or just sort of community resilience and why, Nextdoor has recognize this, where maybe other organizations haven't really taken as strong an approach to this, and how you guys are using this and leveraging it for your Storm Crew and other initiatives that you've done.
Sure. I'm gonna answer this a little differently than you asked it, but I think it gets the point across. So, you know, Storm Crew, let me just tell people what that is real quick. On Nextdoor, we have an initiative called Storm Crew, and on our help map, and if you're on Nextdoor on the residential platform, you just sign in, go to the Discover tab, and there's a help map. On the help map, you can ask for and offer help. Because it's winter, we're suggesting people shovel each other out. Ask for help shoveling or offer your neighbor help shoveling. It's working. It's awesome. I love it. I'm so freaking happy about it. And it matters to government, to emergency managers, because essentially we're reducing the burden on government so government can focus on the most acute cases of whatever people need, right? It also builds connection and resilience between neighbors. So they, like, when you learn somebody needs help shoveling, you're probably going to check in on them for any time anything happens, right? Which is valuable, right? And I'm sorry, I cut you off. What were you going to say?
Well, I was going to say, I think the expectation that government is going to help you do anything outside of, like, really a truly 911 emergency during, you know, even a routine type event is kind of unexpected. It's why, like, the social media videos of, like, the fire truck stopping by, and, you know, they're digging out the fire hydrant, and then, oh, let's help the elderly, you know, neighbor, you know, shovel their driveway and do all this stuff. It's just because there isn't capacity or bandwidth. Like, there is no other solution. And I think that's, it's okay to call that out. Like, you are one of only a handful of ways that this can be done. And I think it's critical. Like, I think that's, it's not being done, especially by some communities that just frankly have no capacity. They're not even trying to, create these types of movements.
So, coming back to the story, back in 2013, I had a horrible marketing idea called Snow Crusade. So Storm Crew used to be called Snow Crew, and it was powered by CClickFix. My friend Ben Berkowitz was the CEO of CClickFix, and we hacked it. So you, instead of asking the reporting something to the city, report it to your neighbors.
Yeah.
We ran that for a couple of years successfully. It was awesome. But to promote it, I drove from DC to Boston on a snow crusade. Didn't go viral. but on on my trip up 95, I stopped and shoveled neighbors that requested help shoveling.
Yeah.
And what I noticed is every single person who requested help shoveling had neighbors. And when I talked to them, they're like, yeah, I don't know them. I'm afraid to ask.
Yeah.
And so one of the things we're doing at Nextdoor is we're productizing and normalizing asking and offering for help. And because 1 in 3 households use the platform, chances are pretty good that you're going to get help or someone's going to take you up on your offer because people need help shoveling. And shoveling isn't just about like removing snow. It's about stabilizing folks, right? They can get to work, to school, to the grocery store, to doctor's appointments, that kind of stuff. And that really kind of reinforced an experience I've had that if people who live nearby each other know who needs help with what and when and how they can help them, many people will take that action. So we're trying to solve that problem. And with so many people connected to Nextdoor, whether or not they're social capital, it does like, one of the things about moving back to Vermont is, you know, the first day here, like 5 neighbors stop by and introduce themselves. Like I'm usually the one that has to do that. I was like, this is amazing, but that's just our culture. I love that.
Sure.
But there is, I believe there's an innate human desire and need to connect and to contribute and to belong. And so we're facilitating that on the platform, which I think is really important. I did another interview this morning with a reporter out of Ohio, and I finished the interview by saying, you know, it's through service to each other that we discover what we have in common. And right now there's so many external inputs, social media, you know, all the things that separate us. And I feel like that's really dangerous because there are things we have in common. Like I have a buddy who's like totally opposite on the political spectrum.
Sure.
And, you know, we've been friends since high school and we just ask each other questions and we listen. And I know all the things we have in common because we've gotten to that point. And service is a great way to just discover the humanity in each other. And asking for help is actually a gift. You're giving someone the opportunity to contribute to you. And when you deliver, when you help somebody, you're giving the gift of demonstrating to them that they matter, that they're important, that their life is valuable. And it just, there's this magic. I've been trying to figure out how to articulate this, but it just feels really good. And there's not enough of that really good feeling. And so, you know, thinking about, you know, all the disasters and stuff that are happening, like every 18 days, there's a $1 billion disaster, right?
Yeah.
Something like 90% of disasters involve flooding. 1 in 3 Americans have experienced, you know, some kind of crazy weather. 1.some% of people are displaced every year now. It's crazy. Like there is a crucial need out there for assistance and help. And I feel that, you know, the place that Nextdoor plays in this marketplace of connecting all these neighbors to each other so they can help each other is essential and critical right now. And as you can tell, I'm really passionate. I don't want to like, just, I feel like I'm preaching, but it's what I believe here.
No, I think it's a reality. The other thing that, you know, so there's 2 things, I want to go back to. One is the polarization. You know, when you talk to anyone, if you don't bring up politics, you find out we're all kind of after the same thing, right? Like we want to, you know, have a roof overhead. We want to have, you know, the opportunity to, you know, succeed on our own. We want security. We want food, you know, just the Maslow's hierarchy of like, you know, needs. And then, you know, so how do we do that? I really like that you said that you've got, you know, I'm in the military. I've got friends of all sorts of different political backgrounds, of all sorts of extremes. One of my, you know, closest friends, we disagree in a lot of things. The minute we start to disagree in something, we say purple because it's red and blue mixed together. And we're that's our signal to like pause for a second and sort of say either A, we're arguing for the exact same thing. We're just doing it through 2 stupid ways or like we're being stupid and we're getting nowhere. So let's, you know, take a break from this. But like it is a, you can, I think people have really sort of created a tribal relationship to a lot of different things, and it's not necessarily helping us. And when you're in a disaster, that communal suffering brings everyone together. It is the, it levels the playing ground because it doesn't, nothing else matters when, you know, the neighbor's house burns down and they lose everything. You know, any good, you know, human being is going to go, what can I do to help them? Like, and it doesn't have to be anything big, right? It can be a little act. Social media, I think, has changed how we approach problems in that, you know, I was thinking about, you know, buying a car or whatever, you know, I bought a car last year. I knew everything I needed to know before I went to the dealership. I really didn't need the dealership to do anything. I just needed them to sign the paperwork so I could go pick up my truck and they could leave me alone the rest of the time.
Is Carvana sponsoring this podcast today? I'm just curious.
Yeah, it is. It is like, I think most people are going to do their investigation before they do anything now, because mm-hmm. you have the ability to. Anytime I'm meeting with someone, I go on LinkedIn, you know, try to find out the professional. If I can find them on other social media, I will, just to kind of get an idea of like, what are their interests? What kind of things are they into? You know, I have avoided Facebook and Twitter more often than not, just because it gets so ugly sometimes, but, and that's fine. Right. I actually don't care if people have like, you know, short of like absolutely abhorrent views on stuff, but like, you know, we express ourselves in different ways, whatever. But we do our window shopping first online. So I think that's why Nextdoor is kind of cool, is like, you have a neighbor that comes in, like, you know, walking up to someone's door and knocking and saying like, hey, I'm your new neighbor, is pretty intimidating, especially like nowadays when everyone's got a gun and you just don't know. Right. And so it is a way to sort of gently open that door and just say, hey, I'm here, you know, and here's some stuff I'm into. Here are, you know, here's what I look like. Here's my family. So if you see me around town, and it sort of gives permission like, oh, okay, I can talk to them. Like they're saying it's okay for me to approach them. And now that that's has happened. And I think in a disaster, you know, we talk about it all the time in emergency management. You don't exchange business cards in the middle of a storm. Mm-hmm. And so having that network ahead of time, I really like the, like what you were talking about earlier about, you know, joining, you know, groups in your neighborhood or forming collective groups, because you can share passions. I go to New York Comic Con every year. I'm not a huge comic book guy per se. I love sci-fi and that type of stuff, but I'm not a diehard hardcore person. But when I am in the Javits Center surrounded by, you know, tens of thousands of fellow nerds, I'm all in. Like it is just, you're safe. You can let down of your, you know, social barriers, that awkwardness that we were talking about earlier, because you're like, cool, I'm accepted here and it's okay. And now those folks are in my circle. So if something were to happen, I can rely on it. You can see this actually, you know, when emergencies happen at Comic-Con, it's amazing. Like all of a sudden people come together, you know, people, it's tens of thousands of people, people have medical emergencies and all this stuff. And you just see all these folks who are like, you know, is anyone an EMT? You know, oh, I know CPR. All right, let's all like come together and solve this. And there's no hesitation, where when you're out in like random community where you don't know anyone, no one knows each other, and you see someone drop, everyone goes into bystander, you know, mode. And they're like, well, someone else will call for help. I don't know who this is. I don't want to get involved. I don't know why this is happening. Maybe there's some reason, you know, maybe they're on drugs. Maybe they're a criminal. Like it's all this stuff that like we're projecting onto other people because we don't know. Mm-hmm. So I think any way that we can break that down is huge. And then having a platform like this from an emergency manager's perspective, you know, in the sunny days, I got to go in there, get a feel for what my community is interested in and what they're doing. And I can share that information ahead of time. You know, we talked, I think was it yesterday?
I think it was yesterday
about just like, you know, how to sort of change how we're approaching preparedness and readiness.
That's right.
And using like behavioral economics, the nudge, right? You know, instead of saying you need 72 hours worth of supplies, which is potentially thousands of dollars, which people don't have. Say, hey, while you're at the grocery store this week, grab an extra, you know, gallon of milk or a gallon of water and, you know, store it somewhere.
Or refill
buy some granola
refill
bars.
That juice box or that soda bottle with water and put it in your freezer.
You know, check your gas cans that are, you know, next time you're going to get gas for the lawnmower or something, you know, maybe fill an extra one up so you've got it for a generator.
Incremental
for your
preparedness.
Car. Yeah, I think it's just such a more approachable and realistic thing. And eventually, you know, I like to do this even in how I write plans and stuff. I don't like to just dump all this stuff on them. I want them to sort of like start to pick up, okay, we're doing your hazard vulnerability assessment. Let's get that on our feet. Let's get used to that. Let's get comfortable. Now we got our emergency operations plan. Let's get used to that. You know, let's get comfortable. And you just slowly build out this thing and you make it like really easy. You work on small components at a time. It takes longer for sure. But it's like almost going back to the first conversation of like when it's so big and so daunting, people don't want to do it because they're afraid of that first step. So if there's a way to break that down, which Nextdoor does, I think really, really effectively. And it was funny because I've been in and out of Nextdoor for however long you guys, I joined when I was, I think with the state, cause I was a community liaison when I was there. Mm-hmm. And I've dropped off for a little while and I logged back in. I was like, oh my gosh, I haven't been in here in a while. Like I should check this out. And I'm like, look at all this stuff that's happening around me. I still get the email thread. So I get all the information, but I haven't actually logged in and checked
the app
out.
Is a great experience.
Yeah. It's just, I think it's people need to find that community and it can be, however, if you got the guts to go knock on doors and say, hey, what's up? I'm your neighbor. That's awesome. You know, go to the meetings in person. I think in person is always better. But if you're nervous or you're not ready, I mean, this is like the perfect opportunity to test the waters, if you will.
And let me just clarify one thing for the emergency managers out there. There's the Nextdoor residential platform, which you've been talking about. We have a free government platform called Nextdoor for public agencies that I mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
If you're not using that, just like that business card exchange during the next disaster is not the time to like, oh, I should start using Nextdoor. Go to nextdoor.com/agency and you just fill out the form. We pre-verify every government agency that applies. So you're verified once you're there. That allows you to communicate with every person who's using Nextdoor in your municipality. Geo-target posts, the audience is built in, and only you can start conversations. So it's not something else to manage. It's another tool in your toolbox to reach more people in specific places. The cool thing I just remembered that I forgot to say earlier is that you can give us your shape files for flood zones or hazard areas, and you can target specific messaging to different cohorts of your community based on the hazards they face, you know, based on geography or based on where they live. So that is just an essential tool for emergency managers. And talking about preparedness, in our content library, which you can access through the product, there's over 100 different suggested posts that I've written. Many of them are preparedness polls. And I mentioned the term incremental preparedness. You do need to suggest one simple step. Telling your community to build a kit makes how, where, and where, why, like, huh? But if you say, I was working with LA Emergency Management earlier this week. I think I told you about that yesterday.
Yeah.
You know, how are you storing water? And we give options that make sense based on, you know, you have the stackable containers, you've got the water bladders, or you're filling up like old water jugs. Like that is a free way to do something that you probably have no matter what your economic status is.
Yeah.
And that makes it accessible to folks. Mary Jo Flynn Nevins, who is commissioner of Sacramento Emergency Services, she said something to me years ago that I practice in my own home is like with that incremental preparedness, it's that one extra can of beans and you rotate, right? Like we have to make preparedness accessible and doable and not daunting. And what I've seen a lot of emergency managers do is take these polls that are pre-written that has this content already and put it out. And polls are really fun. Like we talked about yesterday, it's kind of gamifying, right? Like nobody in the history of time has ever woken up and nudged their partner like, hey, honey, let's talk about preparedness. It doesn't happen, right? So, like,
I'm sure there's some hardcore nerdy emergency managers that, yes, all right.
I stand corrected. I don't mean to be disrespectful.
Not me, for sure.
But I mean, there's a ton of value there, and there's, you know, when you think about the social landscape right now, Nextdoor helps you reach your residents. Like we're really good. We don't help you reach visitors or like businesses. But if you are looking to increase preparedness and build capacity in your community, that's such an awesome platform. You can, you know, we're doing Storm Crew, which is great. Your neighbors are connected. But you can really invest and instruct people how to do it. And I think one of the reasons why a lot of emergency managers are doing a lot of preparedness is you can't measure it. I've come up with a mechanism that you can. We've proven that to be successful. So anybody interested in that, you know, anybody listening here that wants to reach out and talk more, I forgot to say this earlier, you know, Joseph at Nextdoor is my email address. You can find me on LinkedIn and I'd love to chat.
Put all that info in the show notes. This is awesome. I will definitely have you back on because I think, it sounds like when we were talking, you know, yesterday before the podcast, you know, there's all sorts of like cool, innovative stuff you want to do. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I know you've been there for 10 years, but it sounds like, you know, you're just getting started and there's, you know, every single time you know, I guess we've only chatted twice, but both times, like, you've talked about these like initiatives and ideas that are like, you know, like, here's, it's just kind of hanging out there. Like, how do we fix this thing?
Well, I love learning. I mean, one of the, you know, I've already learned a lot from you, and I love talking to emergency managers to hear what's on their mind and what they're solving, because one of the things I can do is connect them to each other. Right. Like,
yeah.
And I like to, I host webinars in our resource hub where our content library is and where people can learn about all the cool stuff everybody's doing. Like, this is a community, and, you know, thank you. I reached out to you cold on LinkedIn. I'm like, hey man, I just moved to town. I don't know too many people in the, you know, in the space. And you're like, sure. And look what it turned into. Right. It's just, relationships really matter and they're key. One thing I did want to touch on that you mentioned in the beginning is the National Preparedness Leadership Initiative.
Yeah.
It is a wonderful experience. There's in-person and there's online. I'm a global ambassador for them. It is immensely helpful because it connects you to people cross-sector, and just the frameworks and tools they provide are so helpful. They're helpful in your thinking and your problem-solving capacity and helping you be an effective meta leader. I would hope, like, my dream would be there'd be like funding for everybody who wants to do it. It's the online program is fairly accessible, and you can get you know, funding to do the in-person. Like you said, there's nothing like that, but it is such a powerful program, and it really helps.
I mean, it's just the network from that, you know, it's like the FBI Academy for police. It's
That's
like,
right. mm-hmm.
you know, National Fire Academy, you know, for firefighters. Like, when you attend these things and you get to like be with like the brightest minds, you know, who are all doing different things, you know, that mishmash, the diversity of, you know, thought and background and experiences, just makes, you know, this is why, again, like, don't think of preparedness as it's your sole responsibility. I think it's so important to find a community of people, you know,
it's
our little neighborhood here. We go out, we talk, you know, before a major event, like, you know, across the street, my neighbor is a former Air Force emergency manager, so he knows like Seaburn stuff really well. My other neighbor is a combat vet. You know, like, we go through stuff. We're like, hey, you know, what happens if this happens? You know, who's going to take responsibility? Mm-hmm. You know, we've got we share our resources. It's how you survive a critical incident. And so anything that makes that stronger, I think, is so critical. And I think Nextdoor is definitely one of those tools. And I will definitely be bothering you more, because one of the things, we had the major windstorm that went through. Mm. And I wish we had enacted the neighbor helping neighbor, because we had a bunch of neighbors that had their homes destroyed just down the road. I don't think many people even knew it happened. Like, it's so just trying to get that information out there. So thank you so much. I really appreciate your time. I will definitely have you back on. There'll be everything in the show notes. Any closing thoughts before we go?
I appreciate you, man. Thanks for having me on the show. And thank you to everyone who's listening for the work you do in your communities. It's a lot. And I appreciate it. Everyone at Nextdoor appreciates it. So thank you.
Awesome. Well, Joseph, we'll chat soon. Like, subscribe, leave comments, you know, email Joseph for more information so you can learn about this. And like I said, I'll put everything in the show notes. And thanks for listening.